want to talk to Mike real quick about a big, great, massive podcast I'm doing tomorrow.
Oh, yes.
Okay, with the one and only Antoine Jones. Okay,
that is really, now, really cool.
It's really amazing. So you are a fan of that case just like I am.
Absolutely.
So basically what we have is Mr. Jones is going to be in our studio. He's going to be in the studio tomorrow. We're going to talk about his seminal Supreme Court case and also talk about his life from, you know, the streets of D.C. all the way to what he's doing today. He's doing, you saw some of the news story he's doing today.
It's amazing, yeah.
He's doing amazing stuff. He's changing lives. And, you know, who better to change lives than somebody who's actually been through a life-altering event like this? He can speak with authority on this.
Mm-hmm. It's wild to think because, like, I feel like I know Antoine. Like,
yeah, because we show a lot of his videos
on him, talked about him so much, had dialogues and questions, but either with our students or just you and I. It's pretty amazing.
Just real quick though, it's asking me to speak.
Hold on, cancel.
Yep. Sorry. So one thing too is just real briefly, what is the Jones case? And now this is all messed up.
You hear us talk about it mostly as the GPS case, mm-hmm. right? The GPS tracker case. And, you know, my friend here sitting to my right.
Just so people know, Mr. Jones is actually in the studio with his lovely wife.
I had the great honor of meeting him and his wife here just a few minutes ago. And like, I told him, I go, I feel like I know
totally,
you. Like we're acquaintances forever.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is, it's pretty cool to sit there and talk a little about him. Yeah. Standing here watching it.
Yeah.
So for what we teach is, Mr. Jones lived in the Washington, D.C. area and he's been investigated for high level drug trafficking.
Yep.
And, the FBI was looking at him and other joint operations were looking at him for being involved in this. And, you know, they had enough information, but not quite enough for the indictment, the arrest. They're still putting the case together. And a lot of, you know, like for those of you guys know me, I've worked with the DEA task force for a lot. So these investigations are long term.
Right.
You know, they're not just open and closed type thing. There's a lot of effort, manpower stuff. So these are long term investigations. And so they got to the point where they had enough information. They wanted to tie some of the pieces of the puzzle together. And they got a search warrant to put a tracker on his car. And
don't Reader's Digest because you might be getting up too much.
So yeah, I don't give it too much here. But anyway, they get it. There's part of that story that will leave for suspense.
Yeah,
right?
Nice. Yeah.
But they end up putting this tracker on the car. All right. And they get a bunch of information, tons of information about this that ultimately ties a lot of the pieces of the locations together here.
Sure.
And they arrest Mr. Jones after they put these search warrants to his house, nightclubs, and kind of a stash house there.
Yep,
and
yep.
Make that arrest on it there. And the argument, the discussion that came from that case was,
well, it's groundbreaking because it changes the way law enforcement does
it. Absolutely did. And, you know, we talk about our two types of searches on this all the time here. And a lot of it originated with when we talk about reasonable expectation of privacy in our Katz case that we talk about a lot here. But that was a lot of the discussion that kind of branched off this whole new area of a search. Yeah.
And I what I love too is there's a famous saying out there is anybody who represents himself is a fool for a client.
Except
Mr. Jones ain't no fool.
Yeah.
So Mr. Jones is actually he's in the audience right here, and I'm glad he is. So it's kind of weird to talk about him in the third person when he's actually looking at me right now. He's like, you better get it right. Right, Mr. Jones? But one thing is he represented himself, and he's actually the only person that I know in federal court that has represented himself and actually is a free man today. That's how smart he – and that's how he knew his case. We'll talk about a story. I want him to tell a story, and we're going to have it all from start to finish. He's going to tell us everything.
Oh, it's fantastic.
And he's also going to talk, really focus on what he's doing today and what we can learn from everything. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. Let's bring Jose on. So Jose needs you're going to try to bring Jose on the speaker. Yep. All right, Jose, Rick is trying to give you permission to use your microphone.
How are you, gentlemen? It's...
Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
How are you?
Good.
Yes, how are you? I got two questions. My first question is, here in the state of Connecticut, I'm an officer in the state of Connecticut, and we have more restrictive laws here, especially the new Police Accountability Act took away from us the ability to request for consent to search a person or a property. So it has
to be... Unless you have reasonable suspicion, right?
Well, it has to be now unsolicited. Unsolicited request to search. So the person just has to say, I want you to search my vehicle. We can no longer no longer ask the person for consent or have implied consent. It has to be everything through search warrants. You get to love Connecticut. So if I stop the person, if I temporarily detain a person that is suspected to be committing a crime or have committed a crime, is it lawful based on the fact that I cannot request for consent to search? If the person has a backpack, can I search that backpack for officer safety reasons, for weapons or anything that might harm me within that intervention?
Well, let me answer the question under the Fourth Amendment, because I do know that Connecticut has always been a tough state. You know that it's like Massachusetts, Connecticut. You're a very tough state. You're more restrictive than Texas, right? But I am not aware of any law in Connecticut. You tell me, and if there's anybody on here that knows more than I do on this, I'm not aware of any law in Connecticut that says that you folks do not have a protective sweep doctrine under Michigan versus Long, meaning if you have reasonable suspicion that somebody is armed and dangerous, that you couldn't do what it, you know, to search a limited search for weapons to keep you safe, right? I'm not aware of that. Are you aware of anything like that says you can't? I mean,
if we have PC to believe that the person is armed and dangerous, we could, for officer safety reasons, we could search the person just for weapons only. But in the case that the person just, because I had a situation the other night where we were driving down, I was patrolling my beat, and I saw these two gentlemen with hoodies and backpacks, and they, as soon as they saw me, they began to run. So it was an unprovoked flight. Yep. I temporarily detained them, and they had like a whole bunch of their things in their pockets. So I kind of did a pat down. I felt what I believed to be rocks. They had a backpack, so I asked to open the backpack just for officer safety reasons, and I saw there was like a slingshot in there. So they were throwing rocks at vehicles that were driving through the main road. But I was always wondering if that was a lawful search or not, based on the fact that we
can I ask you a question though? Go ahead.
They haven't, at that point, they haven't committed a crime. I wasn't aware of the crime. They just saw me and started running. It was 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought when you said rocks, I thought rock cocaine.
Oh, yeah, same, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
No, rocks and a slingshot. And they had a slingshot, yeah.
And did you have...
So they were shooting the crack rocks to the customers.
That's like the happiest people in Connecticut.
Down the street,
they get
right?
Free crack cocaine. It just comes right into their mouth.
Right. And then they launch the money back. And how's that?
Yeah, they launch it back. It's like a very efficient system.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, so... Well, you did say one thing that I want to clarify. You said that, you know, you had PC, you need PC that they're armed and dangerous. That's not a fair statement, is it? Isn't it reasonable suspicion that they're armed and dangerous?
Reasonable suspicion is correct.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure that Connecticut's not even tougher than that. But look, do you, one thing I want to ask before I answer it, when you felt those rocks, did you actually have any inclination that they were using those rocks for a slingshot?
Not at all.
Right. You just thought it was kind of weird that they had rocks in their pocket?
Yeah, I just felt it. I asked, he said rocks, so I had him empty his pockets.
Well, when you say you had him empty their pockets, you told them to empty their pockets?
Well, I basically manipulated the rocks from the outside out to coming out, like pushed them out of the pockets at the time.
Right, because you thought that they could be a weapon, probably, right?
A rock? Not really. I just felt like a whole bunch of rocks.
Well, look, so let's make sure we got our, I mean, I want to be careful here because there's a few things going on. Number one is if you felt a rock in their pocket and you're like, those rocks are not a danger to me, then why are you even pulling them out of the pocket? Right. I mean, so, yeah. But I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that rocks could be a danger to you. I mean, rocks are kind of, it is a moderate chance that rocks could actually be used to hurt you.
I've had a few thrown at me.
I mean, the courts are letting cops take less and dangerous things out of people's pockets, like vape pens and stuff like that. But look, the rule is that if you feel those rocks and you feel that it's not a drug, right? It's a rock, right? So it has to fall under something that could be a weapon. I do think that you could articulate that it could be a weapon. I think it's not a foregone conclusion, a little bit of a stretch maybe, but once you took those out, it's because they're a weapon, right? And then the other thing is, can you continue to search their bag? Well, I can definitely tell you that there are plenty of cases out there where bags have been searched under the protective sweep doctrine, but the courts always want specific reasons. Like, they want reasons why you're going into that person's bag to secure a weapon and so forth. That's why I asked you if you thought that potentially those rocks are being used in a slingshot. If you had the slingshot, I think you're going to be fine because that is a weapon. But I will be honest with you, based on what you're telling me, and I don't know anything more, it sounds like a little bit of a weak case. And I also consider, when I answer your questions, I do consider this the place where you police. Connecticut is a little different than Texas. And my answer is a little bit more strict because I think your courts are hard on you.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
And so I think they're going to be a little restrictive, critical on that issue. Would you agree?
It's really hard to police in Connecticut, to be honest with you.
It is, yeah. And I'm sorry for that. It's, this is not a political show. So the people in Connecticut are going to have to, you know, demand more from their politicians on this issue because cops get hurt and, you know, bad guys get away. But I'll also tell you, I'm not very familiar with Connecticut case law because I don't really teach there. And so I wish I had more for you, but based on what you're telling me, I'd be a little cautious that it was good.
Did you guys talk
about my second question is, if we do another trivia, can we choose one of the guns from the wall that you guys have there?
Well, I absolutely only if you win, because I know you being in Connecticut, you can't even possess them. I mean, you're giving that gun right back to me.
Well, thank you for the answers. I appreciate that.
Exactly.
Wait, hang on before you go real quick. Did you guys talk about when you're patting down bags in the plane field? I saw most of the webinar earlier, but
I did not talk about that.
Kind of working outside in.
No, I didn't about it.
Yeah. So when, you know, just since kind of the bag came up and you know, the concern for weapons and articulating, you know, patting down a bag, we like to talk about, you know, kind of peeling back the onion a little bit here. You work on outside in on that bag, you know, depending on the material the bag's made out of, or if it's a firm sided, you know, the courts want you to work outside in. And if you do need to open up that bag to confirm if there's a weapon inside there, just explain why. Hey, it was a firm sided bag. I couldn't tell from patting down the exterior of it, so I opened up the bag. But work outside in is really what they're looking for in that.
Also, before, I think there's another good point. Max is also talking about the slingshot. Well, obviously, you don't get the slingshot unless you get the pat down of the bag.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing I think that I understated, or it wasn't something that I emphasized, was the fact that these guys did run.
No, yeah.
And it's a high crime area too, right, Jose?
Well, yeah, there was actually near a motorcycle gang club.
Yeah.
Like almost like 10 feet away from it.
And do you think that these guys were involved in that motorcycle gang club? They were part of it?
They've been in the area. A lot of incidents of crimes have increased in the area since they've been there. They're a known motorcycle club. They're called the Pagans, so they are highly involved with a lot of criminal activity. So,
but you believe you have a reason to believe that they could be involved in that motorcycle club?
At the time, yes.
Okay, good. No, look, that changed the answer.
That's a big factor.
That is a huge factor because now most outlaw motorcycle gangs, right? OMGs are gangs,
correct?
And gang members are, you know, more dangerous than people who go to church twice on Sunday. So you have the running, you have them being potentially part of a gang. They're right next to that gang house. They do have rocks in their pocket, which I think could be a weapon, is a weapon for most courts. And then also the bag is on their person, so they could access a weapon. So now that I've kind of looked at that, Mike, do you think that we're...
I think those are actual factors because we talk about the totality of the circumstances. Those are all things that are involved in. I think that motorcycle gang aspect
is huge.
A big component of it there. They're clearly, their activity in that area is not just like, say, passing through. They're up to something in there. There's articulable factors as we're trying to find whatever.
So Jose, don't hold that on us next time. Okay. That motorcycle gang stuff should have been the first thing you talked about.
Thank you.
You're welcome. My friend.
You're welcome.
All right. And give us that address to send your BB gun to.
Yeah.
All right. So while we're waiting up for who's next, Rick, let me know who's next. I'm going to ask you a question, okay?
All right.
This officer is from Texas.
We like Texas.
God bless Texas.
I'll tell you.
He said, officers get dispatched at a local restaurant. Dispatch advises that the employees ask a subject to leave the property, which he refused. Prior to the officer's arrival, the subject had vacated the property and moved to an adjacent property. So he probably knew cops were on en route. Officers make contact with the subject, who confirms that he was asked to leave at the time and refused. But he basically he admits to like not leaving and complying.
Okay. Yeah.
Subject's advised that he understood that he was not allowed back onto the property. He's no longer going to be an issue. Maybe it's one of these things where, look, you know, they talked down to me. I didn't like it, but I'm not going to be back there. Yes, I was not leaving when I should have, but I won't, you know, do it again. Right.
Okay.
Now, the restaurant wants to pursue criminal charges of criminal trespass. The question is, would this be considered on view, meaning we can make an on view arrest, or would we have to get a warrant? So here's the Code of Criminal Procedure. It says offense, you know, on view, in view. Mm-hmm. A peace officer can arrest an offender without a warrant if the offense is committed in their presence or within their view. Let me ask you that, Mike. Was this violation, you know, was it in the officer's presence?
The violation was not in the officer's presence. The trespass crime, which sounds like, I don't know the Texas elements, but it sounds like you met the element of trespass.
Sure, sure.
Usually you've been, you know, warned and you stay, or you've been warned and you return later on, is most trespassing. And so it sounds like he was warned and he stayed. So
he committed the violation.
He committed the violation, but the violation was not happening in our eyes.
No. So you can also arrest an offender for breaches against the public peace. That's not what's happening here. You know, probable cause to believe he's committed family violence. That's a DV. That's right. Not happened here. And so I don't look. So at the end of the day, this is not a crime that's committed in the officer's presence. So this would have to be a citation, which is not an arrest, or I don't know what the citizen's arrest law is in Texas off the top of my head.
Right.
So maybe the restaurant can make a citizen's arrest, but the cop cannot make an arrest because it's a misdemeanor, not committing their presence.
Right.
All right. Okay. Yeah. So Mark says, issue that criminal trespass, and if they go back, then arrest them. I agree. He's also being cooperative and so forth.
Yeah.
And we have discretion.
Dave on the mic.
All right, Dave, come on deck. Yeah, I will answer that question live, please.
I want to know what restaurant it was in Texas, because they got some good restaurants in Texas.
Yeah, so you want to have a fight in Texas?
Do I want
to? You want to get beat up in Texas?
No, I'd rather not.
Let me tell you how to get beat up in Texas.
Go to Texas.
Go to Texas and tell them In-N-Out is better than Whataburger.
Oh, geez, that will.
I'm serious.
That will be the end of you down there.
Now, do you believe In-N-Out's better than Whataburger?
Oh gosh, they're different to me.
I didn't ask you that question. Do you think it's better? Okay, answer the damn question, Mike.
It might be better.
Damn right, it's better.
Yeah, it might be better.
But luckily, I'm in Las Vegas right now, or I get shot.
Yeah,
these Texans don't mess around.
No. I think that's where I ate last time I was down in Texas too. I'm like, all right.
Hey, let me tell you about a quick Texas story. Is Dave coming on or what? Hey, real quick, David. So I'm with some Texas troopers, you know, and they like, you want to go to lunch? Like I'm teaching the class. Right? I'm like, sure. Like, all right, well, it's cool. Let's just go to Chick-fil-A. I'm like, I don't like, want no Chick-fil-A. I get Chick-fil-A, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want to go to a real Texas place. Like real Texas? I'm like, real? Because somebody mentioned barbecue.
Right, yeah.
So they took my ass to a gas station where it was converted to a barbecue joint.
Oh, man.
And that was the best.
That sounds amazing.
Oh, if you're at a gas station that's converted, you know.
I mean, that's my goal. Everywhere I go to teach for Blue to Gold, I want to find the local place.
Oh, you got a local.
Whatever
man.
Is unique there, or the gas station restaurants.
The gas station restaurant.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. Where the sauce comes out of a pump.
Oh, man. Yeah.
All right. So, David, what you got?
All right. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
All right. Perfect. So, you're walking down this, you see this guy walking down the street wearing a backpack, halfway, you know, known drug area. You decide to make a consensual encounter with him while you're talking to him. You smell the odor of either fresh or raw marijuana, whatever you want to call it, emitting from his person. He obviously claims possession of the backpack. He's wearing it. We detain him. Now, do we have probable cause to search the backpack, or do we write a search warrant on the backpack?
All
if
right,
he
so
does not give us consent.
Right.
Or anything like that.
And now, look, and also you're from Tennessee. We right. know that recreational use marijuana is illegal in Tennessee.
Correct.
Right. Is there any other reason why he could lawfully possess raw marijuana? Could he have a medical card or anything like that?
Not in Tennessee, no.
So good. So that's plain smell, right? You are, and right. Cops are trained in marijuana, and you don't have to be trained. You know what marijuana smells right. like, even if you've never. Yeah. But you're trained in the academy. You know what marijuana smells like. So, you know, is there a fair probability that he's committing a crime in your presence?
Right. Correct. Yes.
Okay. Now, Mike, there's probably two ways to deal with this, right? There's probably an arrest or maybe a search.
Yeah.
And let him go. Because let me ask you something. Would you consider just citing and releasing him?
Yeah, I mean, if it were to a you know, like for us is a misdemeanor amount without any other factors, i.e. baggy, scale,
right.
large amounts of U.S. currency or anything like that. It would be a misdemeanor. Yeah. It would be a misdemeanor amount for, you know, under 14 grams or 14.95, I think.
Yeah.
But
small amount.
You know, yeah, it'd be something you could consider to cite and release.
But just before Mike jumps in here, could you arrest him? Could you be like, you know what? I don't like your attitude type stuff. You know, you could have made this a little easier. I would have maybe, you know, would give you a cite. Could you just arrest him on the spot? If the court agrees you had probable cause?
So,
is it an arrestable offense in Tennessee?
This is my thing, right? Any amount of marijuana, it's an arrestable offense. You can take into custody and charge them. It's obviously left it to the officer discretion.
Sure.
The issue that I'm running in is that we don't have a statute that says just on the just the odor of marijuana is an arrestable offense.
No. Of course it wouldn't say that because I mean, what if I bought marijuana cologne?
Right.
You know, I can't go to jail for that. So, but but there's more to it than just the smell. Well, anyway, we have to establish the probable cause first, right. But go on.
But first thing, I want to commend you, my friend, for doing consensual encounters.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a lost art.
It is.
From what I've seen out there. And so first of all, keep doing them because if done right, they can take you great places, great arrests and doing so. So first of all, that's my comment to you doing that. Keep doing those. Thank all you. Right. Secondarily. God bless Texas or Tennessee, right?
Oh, you just Freudian slip right there.
Well, yeah, exactly, right? I'm still thinking about the barbecue in the gas station for sure. All right, so he can't possess it any way, shape, or form. So we've established that he's potentially violating the law. He can't have it. There's no mistake of fact or anything like that.
Sure,
you
can't no medical,
so,
yeah.
So you can articulate that this person, you know, there's the smell. Maybe there's some other observable facts about this person through your experience that you know, the watery eyes, maybe, you know, whatever it is, statements made by them. So, you know, if you're building yourself into this, well, probable cause that there's evidence on this person, then there's a couple things. One, ask him.
Which you did, but yeah.
And he said, you know, if he says yes, then cool right there. But like you said, more often than not, you're probably going to cite and release this person, but you've got to have something to cite him.
And release him for, yeah.
So as long as you can, you know, there's a fair probability based on everything that's going on, that there's evidence, you know, unlawful substance that he has either on him or in that that backpack we talked about. Well, this, you know, this exigency, you know, hey, I think you got marijuana on you. Well, now there's, you know, this guy's thinking, oh, crud, you know, if I get a chance, maybe I'll try to destroy. There's an exigency in there that would, you know, with that articulation would allow you that maybe a specific targeted search where you believe that would be.
Yeah, so right. So this logic that Mike is talking about comes from a Supreme Court case called Murphy versus Cupp, 1970-something-3. Cool. And what happened was, what happened was Murphy, actually, I just think it was Cupp. But but anyway, but a husband was suspected of killing his wife and a very mean thing to do. And he came into the police department like a day later to have his interview. And, you know, it wasn't, he said somebody else killed her, right? Yeah. Somebody came through the window.
Wasn't me.
Wasn't me. And so while the cops were talking, she was strangled to death. Mm. And while the cops were talking to him, they saw remnants of dark brown substance under his nails and they suspected blood. And so what they did was, you know what? We have probable cause that's probably evidence of the crime. And so they took the evidence from him and didn't make the arrest that night.
Right.
Well, they sent it to a forensic, it comes back with her blood type. Also, fibers of her sweater. So look, it's great evidence that he killed his wife. And he says, well, you can't, you know, you can't call it a search into arrest because you never arrested me.
No.
Well, the Supreme Court upheld it under exigency. Now, why does that have to do with this case here? The first thing that we have to get across here is, will a court back up your play here? Will they say, yes, based on what you knew and what you know, what you're going to articulate, that you had probable cause that they're possessing raw marijuana right now? Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, in my view, and you can disagree with me if you want, but in my view, there's three smells of marijuana. There's raw marijuana. Mm-hmm. There's burnt marijuana. I mean, it's all gone, but you can still... And there's remnants marijuana.
Your cologne.
Correct. your cologne, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I think if I was a defense attorney and I was handling this case right against you, and this was my client, and I would ask you on the stand, like, how do you know, like, maybe I would ask it this mm-hmm. way, but how do you know this was raw marijuana, right? Because like
you've got it on you now.
Correct. Because you're not arresting my client just because he went to his cousin's house. And isn't it possible that he went to his cousin's house and his cousin smokes marijuana and now he smells like marijuana because it's a very strong odor, mm-hmm. right? And yeah, so how are you, say it again.
They're distinct odors.
They are distinct odors. Yes. And so are you able to testify credibly under oath that, no, Your Honor, I'm not smelling burnt marijuana. This is not him visiting his cousin situation. I have a probable cause that he's possessing raw marijuana right now. Can you articulate that with confidence?
Yes, absolutely.
Then there you go. So mm-hmm. if you let him go, the evidence goes away. So either but you've got to articulate this. And remember, you watched the webinar, right? I talked about playing field, I said, don't just talk about the way this thing feels, right? The object, if it's going to be, you know, cocaine or methamphetamine and so forth, or a glass pipe. How many times does the person actually look like they're addicted to narcotics? The lack of self-care, disheveled appearance. They have a history for drug use. They tell you that mm-hmm. they're an addict. So the point is, there's a lot of other factors that you could testify that makes you holistically mm-hmm. to tell you circumstances that this person is currently possessing, marijuana.
You have a bag of Doritos in his hand at the time.
Bag of Doritos, 7 Up, Hyundai Elantra. Like, these are all
these
things
are
that
all
you can testify.
Factors, yeah. Totality of the circumstances.
So tell you circumstances, okay?
Wait, what was this T-shirt? That could be something too.
It was funny. It's like there was a case. Well, we show a video where the guy wears a T-shirt and it says, like, it's basically says it's time to re-up. I mean, let's be honest here. If you wear a T-shirt that says it's time to re-up, you probably have drugs on you right now. You know what I mean? Or no, at least you're looking for the drugs. Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, back in doing my narcotics days, if I could drive by a house and see a Scarface poster in the window, I could get a search warrant off that.
How dare you? That's profiling.
That is probable cause.
I love
all day long.
Come on, I love Scarface.
I don't know how many warrants I did, but I think it was 100% accuracy. If we hit the door and there's Scarface on the wall,
what's funny is Scarface had this gun.
Oh yeah.
You know, he had
is that his little friend right there?
He had the little say hello to my little friend, you know? All right. So the answer to you, the answer at the end of the day is what's the alternative? Let this guy go? I mean, you know, I know it's not the crime of the century, mm-hmm. but Tennessee law is Tennessee law, right? And at the end of the day, he is breaking the law. You smell raw marijuana. You either A, do a targeted search like Mike did, you recover it, and in that report, you should articulate exigency to recover the evidence before it's lost, right? It'll never be seen again. Or you do a search incident to arrest and you just take him to jail. Okay? Yep. Okay.
That makes sense.
All right. All right, so next on deck, handle that, Rick. Let me answer this. Answer another question. Is my studio audience okay?
All right.
Okay, so here is one so look, the guy's name is Chris. He's not a cop. You know, he didn't put any agency in there. I think he's a sovereign citizen, which I'm not trying to insult him. But the reason I say that is because he asks, do you need a driver's license in the United States?
Okay.
Fine, it's a legit question. Then he says, by the way, you know how we love, we're not just for cops here.
Oh, yeah.
We like our citizens. I have a lot of people who are constitutionalists, who are maybe declared sovereign,
We had a question last week too. That was from a citizen. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Look, ask the question. if it's a legit question, mm-hmm. this is, you know,
yeah.
Or it's an interesting question. Mm-hmm. He says, have you checked out Brandon Joe Williams, YouTube channel? Now, The answer is no.
I don't know the name.
I do not know this guy's name, and I probably just gave him a lot of street cred.
Is that let's go, Brandon?
I looked up Brandon Joe Williams today in preparation of this, and this guy, let's just say he has methods to not pay taxes.
Oh.
Okay?
All right.
And I would love to not pay taxes, but I also...
like driving on the streets, right?
But also, I got to tell you, I also know that the guy has 13,000 followers. And if you really, let's be honest here, okay? If you really figure out the magic way to not pay taxes, you're going to have a lot more than 13,000 followers.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, there might be a few people that want to check that out.
You'd be millions of followers, 300 million to be exact, if you found a way to really not pay taxes.
This is true, right?
So I personally am going to pay. No, I like what Chris Rock says. He says nobody pays taxes. You guys know that? You know that? Nobody pays taxes. He says they take taxes. That's not a payment.
Yeah, that's not an option, right? Would you add a tip? Would you like to add taxes today?
He says,
nah, I'm good.
He says, that's not a payment. That's a jack. All right. Yeah, so
every time you go to the
store. I do not pay taxes voluntarily, but I do pay because I don't want to go to prison.
This is a good point.
Now, the question for you, Mike, is do you need a driver's license in the United States? Like, we teach constitutional law here.
Right.
But is it, look, let's take it for what it is. Is it constitutional for a state to require a driver's license?
Absolutely.
Why?
The states have their own powers. They have their own sovereignty. Mm-hmm. They can make rules that are outside the measure of the Constitution to a certain degree. And, you know, there's rules and regulations if you want the privilege to drive a car on these roads that are paid by taxes.
No, they're paid by – the roads are paid by Brandon Joe Williams, who has figured a way to not pay taxes and to pay for the roads.
Right,
see, it's exactly a magic thing there. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah, so, but you're wrong, though. And the reason why you're wrong, Mike, and I hate to, you know, embarrass you in front of Mr. Jones here, but you're wrong is because there's a right of travel in the Constitution.
Oh.
So how do you have a right of travel? Why do I have to have a license?
Well, this is, you know, what a lot of people that rely on that federal aspect here, they have they're merely traveling.
Yeah.
They're not
in commerce.
They're not in commerce. They're not abiding by
UCC.
State's rules in there. But the state that they're in says you have to.
But doesn't that violate the right of travel? Answer the damn question.
No.
Why?
Because
you can walk.
The states can be more restrictive. They can set up their own shops here, and they have.
All right, I'll just tell you. You're beating around the bush. The answer is okay. Let me tell you. The answer is the right of travel is the right to walk.
Mm. That's all it pertains to.
Pretty much. Okay.
Then why is there such a misnomer when that gets used so much that?
Because people think that the right of travel is for all modes of transportation.
Any mode of travel. Oh, okay.
The courts have been very clear that you don't have a right of travel on an airplane.
Mm.
You don't have a right of travel on,
There's limitations.
Mm-hmm. Your right of travel is essentially to go into other states. That's really what these cases are about. You have a right to move to California or move from California.
Hey, easy.
Okay?
Speak good words.
Correct. But the right of travel essentially is the right to walk.
Mm.
You know, but I mean, I'm being funny.
You don't have to have a license to do that.
You don't have to have a license to walk. I mean, I'm being funny, but I'm also being truthful.
But,
you can't require a license to walk around.
No.
But you can require to drive a car.
Correct. Yeah.
All right. Does anybody? So Max, it is a nightmare in California.
Mm.
All right. So the next question, and Rick, see if anybody else is on deck here. We have a question from an officer in Nebraska. Do you know why it's so windy in Nebraska?
No.
Because every other place blows. Anyway, that's what they told me. I know.
That was on the tip of my tongue. I don't know.
But look, that joke was exported from Nebraska because I was teaching in Omaha.
Uh-huh.
And that's what they told me. Okay, so just so you know.
Did you get steaks?
Yeah, that was I actually got a some damn Omaha good steak steaks. In Nebraska. I actually, truthfully.
Mm.
All right. So
was it at a gas station?
No, they don't have that. They don't have gas station restaurants in Nebraska. Mm. It's a classy joint there. What are the limitations of GANT searches for vehicles involved in crashes? I was hoping to pick your brain regarding current case law on searching vehicles. My understanding of current case law is that basically the motor vehicle exception is not applicable if you have probable cause, if the vehicle has been disabled. Like we're talking about destroyed vehicle. We have the AAA rule, which I want you to talk about. But
okay.
Also answer the question of what if the vehicle is like really it ain't going anywhere, man. AAA ain't getting that car fixed. It's in it's really mashed up and, you know, mm-hmm. right. So can we still search it?
So this is due to an accident that just took place here.
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Or maybe the guy fled from police, mm-hmm. crashed in a ditch, and the vehicle is just in pieces.
Okay.
Can we still search it if we have probable cause?
Well, I'm going to say most likely yes.
Yeah.
And to touch on what you said real quick here, the AAA rule, mm-hmm. what we teach in, you know, these factors when it comes to automobile search, we talk about, you know, could AAA get it going again, a little bit of gas, jump the battery, change the battery out here and get it going here. That, you know, talk about the readily mobility of vehicles, and that's okay. But now you're talking about this thing and it ain't going anywhere.
Yeah.
But it might be. How's it going to get from here to the junkyard?
Yeah. It's going to be on a tow yard. Yeah. It's going to be on a tow truck. I mean,
tow truck here.
So we have two cases. We have Fields out of the Fifth Circuit, and we have a case out of Georgia, which I can bring up the name. Actually, I have it right here. So here's what we teach at Blue to Gold is, we teach the AAA rule, Mobley out of Georgia. So what we basically say, look, it's easy for the courts to uphold these searches if the vehicle has the potentiality for mobility.
Mm-hmm.
However, I also, and I think, I don't know if you heard me say this, out of all the four factors for car searches, probable cause, not on curtilage, readily mobile, and scope of the search mm-hmm. is like, if out of all four, which one's the easiest to get over? It's
the mobility. Aspect,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Courts will bend over backwards to mm-hmm. uphold these searches. And Fields out of the Fifth Circuit said, basically, the reason why it doesn't really matter that the car is completely disabled and it's not mm-hmm. going anywhere ever, potentially, like it's going to be junked, is because the search is still ultimately under reduced expectation of privacy.
Yeah.
The vehicle's on a road.
Mm-hmm.
At least it was.
Well, yes.
it was highly regulated. You know, it is highly regulated. It's just the expectation of privacy. So we know that no agency is required. Now, Mobley out of Georgia said that there was an accident where the guy crashed up his vehicle. Then the cops found the probable cause after the fact.
Mm.
They searched it, and the court threw it out, saying that the vehicle is no potential for movement.
Mm-hmm. I see the discussion there a little bit because, you know, you think about this one here, let's say it's a car chase or the accident takes place and maybe was your probable cause DUI or whatever it may be. That's the probable cause exists while the vehicle still has that mobility.
Maybe as it's fleeing.
You know, maybe there's a little bit of discussion in that. So this one, they didn't discover it until afterwards when that car was not going anywhere. And that might be outside of Carroll a little bit there.
Maybe. You know? And that's why I really do, you know, Zach Miller, one of our instructors, you know, I was talking to him about this today and and he's like, you know, look, he subscribes to the whole, it's going to be upheld. Mm. And I do think it's going to be upheld because if you can argue it right, it's still that reduced expectation of privacy. The fact that it looks crushed like a tin can,
mm-hmm.
it's still, at the end of the day, it still was a motor vehicle.
Correct.
Chambers versus Maroney, it was an expectation of privacy issue. But the reason why we teach the AAA rule at Blue to Gold is because it makes it easy for prosecutors to get over that hump.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you have a car that really, there's no potential for movement, maybe just get a warrant.
Yeah. And I think, you know, maybe the spirit of that a little bit too is if it's a vehicle just sitting on a public street and it's up on blocks and it's got cobwebs all over it here, well then, you know, I think that's really when you start looking at this, like, okay, that's not going anywhere. Yeah. It's not, no one's going to jump in and drive away. So there's that, you know.
Yeah. We have two more questions. And Teresa, do me a favor, pound home that we want these folks to join us on social media. That means a lot to us. That's how they're going to get notified about the Jones interview and so forth. So they want to stay tuned. I have two more quick questions.
Okay.
This one I really like, and it's actually up your alley because you were a narcotics detective. It says, do investigators, this is an officer out of Minnesota, don't you know?
Don't you know?
Don't you know? Can you imagine living in Fargo? Like, if Fargo is anything like the movies, can you imagine living in that place? First of all, it'd be kind of boring, wouldn't it?
I have not been there, but it appears to be chilly.
It's chilly and just kind of, you know, I mean, I would be killing people too if I lived in Fargo because it's like nothing else to do. Put them in a wood chipper. So do investigators need to describe tactics they use to locate a suspect? Oh, this is actually good.
Hmm.
In the reports, such as cell phone pings, confidential informants, some kind of electronic tracking, or would this be appropriate to avoid laying out in the blueprint of how we find people? You know, in other words, they don't want to share mm-hmm. their SOPs or their their way mm-hmm. of doing business. What do you think about that? That's a great question.
That is a really good question. Now, I've seen a lot of reports where cops will just throw in there, you know, due to investigative techniques.
I found the guy
blah,
here.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
Well, how are you going to articulate that in court, or how are you going to hold it? Now, again, sometimes when we talk about there is a, you know, a confidential source or the CS information in there, a lot of that times we can leave that information, like who the person is,
yeah,
but the information has to be in there. Like, you know, you've still got to derive how you got from point A to point B to C to D. You got to
can I ask you something
now? Connect the dots. I don't want to give up all the things, but you've got to kind of connect the dots in my mind.
All right, let me ask you mm-hmm. something, okay? So you have this investigative technique. Now let's at least agree mm-hmm. that whatever this investigative technique is legal. Well, I mean, if they're putting like GPS trackers on people's vehicles without a warrant.
Somebody's GPS.
a Grand Cherokee, yeah, I'm just saying.
I mean, not even in yeah. another state. I mean,
yeah. Let's just throw that out there. As yeah. long as what they're doing is lawful.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say that the case is a fugitive.
Okay.
And they have, you know, they have their third party databases.
Mm-hmm.
They have Accurint, which is a Lexus product.
Yes.
And they look up, you know, I don't know if Accurint is actually mm-hmm. a good example of what I'm trying to say here, but they have their databases that they pay a lot of money for, and they don't want the bad guys to know what they're using. And they track the guy through this mm-hmm. lawful investigative technique. They track him to a parking lot, and boom, they take him in custody.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, why does it really matter how he got there? At the end of the day, he's in a parking lot.
Right.
He has a warrant. We say in our report, I then do investigative techniques.
Mm-hmm.
I found the suspect in a parking lot at right. Walmart. Which is all your criminal activity. Mm-hmm. Boom, I took him in custody.
I'm fine with that. I think there's two components to it. There's some things that lead us to where we need to be, and mm-hmm. then kind of like you slice it from there,
yep.
and why we're there, everything's we can do from there. We've got the reasonable suspicion, we've got the probable cause, whatever it is from how we got.
I see what you're saying. You're saying that if it matters, meaning
yeah, if it matters,
if that investigative
yeah.
technique actually is a part of the fruit of the poisonous tree issue question.
Potentially, yes.
There we go.
I think that then you might need to put a little bit more detail in there.
Yeah.
But if it, like you said, if it doesn't matter, if it doesn't change any of the facts that are needed to where you can go from here,
I agree.
I don't think you need to get real elaborate in.
No, you don't. And actually, doesn't this remind you of a pretext stop?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, mm-hmm. you know, that's Wren. That's mm-hmm. from a case where yeah. the officer saw Wren.
Washington, D.C.
What, man, they're just messing up left and right, huh? So, but you know, but it's interesting, right? Because the officer had a hunch was the right word,
mm-hmm.
that Wren was involved in narcotic activity, yeah. but he couldn't put his finger on it.
Right.
So he found a traffic violation. He pulled him over, and we go from there.
Mm-hmm.
As long as that traffic stop was valid, and as long as the officer was not extending that traffic stop for an unlawful reason or doing something else that's unlawful, do we care about what his hunch was?
Not at all.
But I'll tell you where it does matter. This is a great example. It's a real life example. Here's what happened. Officers were scoping out this guy on his social media, and they saw him playing with his Glock switch. Like if I had a Glock switch, I would not be showing it off on Facebook. You know what I mean?
Right. Well,
I would love it and caress it and keep it under my pillow, but I would not show the ATF that I have an unregistered
exactly.
Glock switch. Okay. It's like bragging about you not paying your taxes online. You know what I mean? You show your Glock switch, and the IRS is after you. You know what I mean?
Right.
So what happened was the officers were surveilling. They're sitting in front of his house, okay? And again, he has this Glock switch. So he comes out of his house. He jumps into a car as a passenger.
Okay.
They look for a reason to stop the driver for a violation. They stop him, and now they ask the passenger for consent to pat him down. What are they looking for? The firearm,
mm-hmm.
okay? Let's pause the story right there. This is all true story. If he says, yeah, you can pat me down, do they ever have to put in there that they saw him with a Glock switch online?
Not a bit.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Why would you do that?
Exactly. Yeah,
why would you tip him off
that
you're watching him online?
If you don't have to play that hand, then don't.
Don't.
Yeah.
And if you want to look, mm-hmm. you know, at the end of the day, if I was involved in criminal activity, I would not be broadcasting on social media. But if you want to put it on social media, you mm-hmm. take a risk that the cops are going to watch you.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, this is what happened. This is the actual case. What happened in the case was the guy said, you ain't patting me down.
Mm.
And so the cops called me real quick. They said, hey, what are we going to do here?
Mm-hmm.
I said, you got a choice.
Yeah.
Either A, you're going to show your cards
yeah.
and you're going to put in that report that you're watching him on social media. And like 10 minutes before you stopped him, you just saw him, you know, show off his Glock switch.
Timeliness. Yeah.
It's very timely. He mm-hmm. was, it was like just right then.
Yeah.
Or you're not going to put that in there and you let him go.
Yeah.
because you can't pat him down without that articulation. Mm-hmm. He's not furtive movements. He's not, you know, trying to challenge
you. It's
not
happening.
No.
Now it's what you know.
Correct. You think that he was just at his house and he has his Glock with him, which he probably, you know, that's a reasonable suspicion.
Yeah.
And I, to my knowledge, I did not get a call back about how this all ended, but to my knowledge, they let him go.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want to burn the social media.
Hmm.
And I think they were working another angle. Maybe something.
Yeah. All right. I mean, you know,
that's their choice. You know, I'm not involved in the investigation.
Maybe they get him identified whatever.
Some cops out there were like, oh, that's an idiot. You just let a Glock switch on the street. Mm-hmm. No, I will tell you that these cops are smart. They probably had another angle to this that was legal. But that's a great example of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I did a ton of wire cases back in the day. And there was a few things where, you know, either people get stopped on their own or we would do wall stops on things here. But
you thought wall stop. Some people don't call it wall stop. Yeah, they call it whisper stops.
Yeah, whisper stops. Basically, you know, I'm not using any of the information I know. We're just using what we have in front of us to do a problem.
The guy will never know that the DEA is investigating him.
Yes, exactly. And there was a wire case that we had. A guy he went down to California to pick up the twins. Right, a couple keys, and was driving it right back. Well, on the way back, he falls asleep outside of Baker, somewhere in California. Falls asleep, wrecks the car.
Yep,
car's trashed, and the chippies are going out there. So I get a call from the wire room, like, "Hey, the guy crashed, whatever." So I get a hold of somebody California Highway Patrol and say, "Hey, I don't want to give up my line.
Yes,
but there's 2 kilos of cocaine with that guy in that car somehow.
Get it lawfully,
do your thing here." And we got there eventually, but I wasn't willing to give up the wire for it.
That's a great example.
Yeah,
he has a pretext.
Mm-hmm.
He knows that based on what you're telling, there's the keys in his car, but he has to do it with consent.
Mm-hmm. And ultimately, that's what dogs. He did consent.
He consented. And they found it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, the last question I have for you, and I do think it's a good question. The officer says, okay, when can an officer use an OBD2 reader? That's that thing you put into the
plug-in.
Yeah, to the car.
Mm-hmm.
To verify a VIN. Some say it's related to identity of the vehicle and can be done routinely on traffic stops. Mm. New York versus class. That's what they're thinking, I'm sure. Some say a warrant is needed, which seems to disregard the motor vehicle exception. And some say, or in the middle, they say reasonable suspicion or probable cause is needed. So let me ask you this, my friends. Can you use an OBD sensor to plug into that vehicle to read that VIN as a matter of routine during a stop for speeding?
There's a case I was thinking of here. It talks about like touching a protected area with the intent to gather information. What was that case called? That was Jones, I think, right? Wasn't that what it was based on here? Well, we don't like the word routinely almost ever. Yeah. You know? So, I think when we're talking about VIN, I don't have any other factors of why it's not visible, whatever it may be.
Well, no. The VIN is visible. There's no reason to believe. They're saying it can be done with as a routine.
No,
absolutely not.
No.
But I like what you said because we're going to talk about this tomorrow in the podcast, but you know, there's two types of searches in the Fourth Amendment. There's privacy and trespass, right? Mm-hmm. Is there a privacy interest in the VIN? No. New York versus class said that.
No.
But you have to have lawful access to the VIN.
Correct.
And that's the problem here.
Yeah. And typically, even in class, they expect you to work, you know, is it here? No. Then where's the next most reasonable, less intrusive way to go, you know, door frame, whatever it may be. Yeah.
So, you know, you imagine you stop a vehicle and, you know, you the VIN plate is obscured.
Mm-hmm.
It's the rivets do not look OEM. Can you open up the door and then look at the placard?
Yes.
And if the placard is not there or painted over, can you then use an OBD2 sensor?
Now you're taking reasonable measures. Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you do have the lawful authority to verify the VIN is the car, and you know that's part of the routine traffic stuff.
Yes.
Just like my license, I can make sure that the car is not stolen. It's lawful and so forth.
Heck, even in your scenario, maybe you've almost developed probable cause that this thing's stolen.
You're right. Actually,
maybe.
If the rivets are non OEM, you likely have probable cause. Yeah. If it's just covered, you just do step by step.
Yeah.
But I will tell you though, in my experience, and you tell me if this is different for you, in my experience, a lot of cops do these OBD2 sensors or the placard because they want to see inside the car.
Mm.
They see the VIN or the VIN's visible. It doesn't look jankety.
You're gonna lose.
But they just want to open up the car because they're just hoping to see what? Gun, drugs, severed head,
you're
right?
You're going
to
lose it.
Well, you're violating the person's rights.
Yeah.
And I guess we'll end off on this. When people read New York versus Class, 1984, whatever it is, They think it stands for the proposition that since the Supreme Court said that nobody has a reasonable expectation of privacy in the VIN, that they can just go look for VINs. But it's two different issues. It's trespass.
Mm-hmm.
And even back then, the Supreme Court even said in that New York versus Class case that, hey, you know, we're not, I'm paraphrasing here, but we're not telling you just to go look and open doors. You have to have a reason first.
Yeah.
In class, the VIN was covered
by
a piece of paper.
Piece of paper. And what do they want you to do? Excuse me, sir. Could you move the paper?
Could you move
out of the
it?
Way?
That's right. You know, that's what's reasonable under the Fourth Amendment.
Yeah.
All right. So I don't see anybody else having any final questions. That means we are done today. Mike, I really appreciate you being here.
Always a pleasure, my friend.
Okay. And again, people, Teresa, do me a favor. I know it's late on the East Coast over there, if you're still even on this webinar, but can you give a shout out for social media so people can get notified by our Jones interview? And for tomorrow, it's going to take us a little bit of time to edit it, but we hope to have it out way before Christmas. It's going to be our Christmas gift to our Blue Gold audience.
I couldn't think of anything better.
It's the best Christmas gift. All right. Thank you, guys. I appreciate you. Thanks, Rick, for everything you do on the soundboard and all the technical difficulties we had today. Couldn't do it without you.